Welcome, in fact, to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside, that's NBA champ, Matt Barnes right there. Welcome, sir. That's the undefeated Mark Spears in the flesh. We're so glad to have you back in the studio. And, of course, our senior writer, Ramona Shelburne, back with us as well. We got the full plate for you guys today. We will get into KD's historic Game 5 in a little bit. But we got to start with an eventful day of NBA news. And that means starting with the L.A. Clippers, who announced Kawhi Leonard is not only out of tonight's pivotal Game 5 against the Jazz with a right knee sprain, is what they're calling it right now, but he is out indefinitely. Now, remember, he appeared to tweak his knee during the fourth quarter of Monday's win. He sat out the final few minutes. Ramona, you were the one reporting on this story for us as it broke. What can you tell us about this injury?
Well, this is a cause for concern, Rachel. I mean, I didn't think he was all that injured in the game because he came out, he was sitting on the bench. There was no trainer attending to him. He wasn't on the injury report in the morning.
And he talked about it after the game.
And he said, I don't want to talk about it. Next question. So, you know, with Kawhi, that could mean anything.
Did he say, I'm fine, next question?
Yeah, I'm fine, next question.
He said, I'm fine. Next question.
Yeah.
So that's what we heard after the game.
Yeah, he seemed okay. He answered a bunch of questions, seemed to be in an okay mood. Last night, I kind of got worried that the situation, that they got bad news on whatever imaging they had done or tests they had done during the day. The fear, Rachel, is that this involves the ACL, which is a ligament in your knee. Mm-hmm. They're calling it a sprain for right now, but they need to do some more imaging to determine how severe this is, because when you have an injury in a game, Matt, you know this, it swells up the next day. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to determine exactly which ligaments are involved here, how serious this is. So right now they're calling this a right knee sprain, but they need to do some more tests to see how severe this is. I think right now the Clippers are prepared to be without him tonight and most likely for the rest of this series.
Jeez. And look, we know.
Yeah, let's see how severe it is.
Sprain, especially an ACL, you want to err on the side of caution. So he could, you hate to say it, could be done for the playoffs.
Right. And look, we saw, again, I think with the Kevin Durant experience in the NBA Finals a couple years ago looms over every decision that every NBA team is making now, right? If there is something that looks, this could be bad, involving an area of your body where, oh my gosh, we could have long-term effects that could knock you out, not just for the rest of the playoffs, but maybe for a year or two, you know, that timeline gets longer and longer.
Yes.
That is some of the concern. We're saying, nah, just go out there and play. It's such an important time of year. Matt, we know now on the other side, by the way, that the Jazz's Mike Conley is also out tonight. His hamstring, of course, has been keeping him out for a while now.
Right.
I don't know if the Jazz saw that. He was questionable originally. I don't know if the Jazz saw the Clippers injury report and were like, maybe we don't need to rush Mike Conley back. That's just me speculating. But, Matt, what do you think that the Clippers need to do there, at least tonight, going out without Kawhi Leonard?
They need to rally around their team right now. You know, Paul George is 1A now, and he's been playing well of late. You just hate to see this because Kawhi has these guys playing so well. Although they went in a 2-0, down 0-2, they've come back in convincing fashion the last two games and really have everyone thinking that they're on their way to the Western Conference Finals. So this is a huge blow to the team. But one good thing for Coach Lou is he has a very deep team. Obviously, you can't replace a guy like Kawhi with one or two players, but by committee, hopefully they can get some of his numbers and the defensive presence he normally brings every night.
And PG, he averaged 26 when Kawhi's out, five more shots a game. Mm-hmm. Terrence Mann, this is your time. Moore Sr., this is your time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at hotels in Salt Lake City for the West Finals right now. Park City or down. Kawhi is the reason why they're here.
Yes.
He is their Superman, and he's been so much more aggressive this series and at the end of last series. Like, I think Paul has it in him, but we need to see some special performance from him like we saw from Kevin Durant last night for the Clippers to survive, and that still might not be enough.
Right, and I mean, by the way, we need to see like what we saw from Kevin Durant last night. That's a nice sentence
to say. That's a lot, right?
No pressure.
That was an extremely historic performance, a tall order, and by the way, from a guy who is considered possibly the best in the game right now. I'm not sure that Paul George, a lot of that should be put on his plate as well. We will see. We have to move on because we have so much that happened this morning. As The Athletic first reported, Chris Paul has entered the NBA's health and safety protocols. The official line is that he is out indefinitely, but here is what we know about a timeline. According to the way NBA rules sit right now, and of course they've evolved, if a player tests positive for COVID, he needs to go into quarantine until either 10 days have passed or he can produce two negative tests that were taken in a 24-hour or 48-hour span. And then even after that, he has to undergo cardiac testing, which usually takes 2 days because there is an observation period in between. Now, there is no difference to this part of the policy if a player was vaccinated or not. However, where the word, gee, is Chris Paul vaccinated and how does this affect things, has come in is that, in general, people who have been vaccinated and then test positive for COVID have either extremely mild cases or asymptomatic and therefore produce negative tests more quickly. That is just what has happened with research on the vaccine. So that is where Chris Paul's possible vaccinated status comes in. Again, right now, the only official confirmation is he is in the health and safety protocol. So we don't have more official information than that. But Ramona, you have also been doing reporting on this. Where are you with what you know about Chris Paul?
Well, I think it's going to have to come from Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Okay, when we get into situations like this, there's HIPAA rules and whether or not somebody has tested positive. But as you said, Rachel, if he has been vaccinated, he can move through these protocols much more quickly. And I think
not because the protocols are any different.
Correct.
It's just that he should pass those signposts.
And I think the best example I can give is we saw with the New York Yankees what happened in that situation where they had one person who had been vaccinated and there was a breakthrough infection and he was a coach on the team and he was symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And there were seven other players who actually tested positive but were completely asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. And they had also been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. This is what we have seen with the vaccine.
Right.
And this is the real world. And this is what's interesting in the NBA this year is we're getting sort of a real life science experiment.
Sure.
Because the vaccine was tested amongst people who weren't getting daily tests like the NBA players are. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still have to be tested all the time. And so players are getting vaccinated and may not even have gone to the doctor or may not even gone for a test to find out if they have COVID. But because they're in the NBA, they have to do these daily tests. And so it's going to be an interesting for all of us to watch. But good thing the Suns swept.
Right.
Good thing they have some time here.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, they're definitely rooting for a game seven. Absolutely. In the other series, right, to push it to next Tuesday. I had heard a couple months ago that the Suns were one of the teams that were least excited to get the vaccine. I don't know how that changed and everything, but the NBA is also pushing the players for their surrounding people. And Chris has a big following, a very strong family. Like, they want everybody in your circle to be vaccinated, too. I don't know if they could require that, but they're certainly pushing this. But, man, my prayers to him, because we really still have to caution on the reality of this is bigger than basketball. You know, Damon Lee at Golden State, he got to Johnson & Johnson, and he ended up getting it, and he was out a month, even though he had gotten the vaccine. So I hope this isn't the case. I hope this is a short thing, and my prayers for him that this is not a big deal, that we see him play soon.
Yeah, I mean, I got a chance to talk to Chris this morning. He is vaccinated. Obviously, frustration on this side. He's like, Maddie, all I do is go to games, practice, and come home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I just don't really know what's going on. So he said he has to, like as you said, continue to get tested till he's cleared. But just, it feels terrible for Chris. I mean, his playoff track record, as talented he is, has been so injury riddled and just bad luck. And then you see in the first game of the playoffs this year, he gets a stinger in his shoulder and he can't shoot. He fights through that, has been playing amazing, leading a team that didn't make the playoffs last year to the Western Conference Finals, and now he's in the safety protocol. So again, hopefully this Jazz Clippers series goes seven games. Chris gets through the protocol fast because he is vaccinated and we can see him back on the court for game one of the Western Finals.
When you talked to him this morning, is there anything else he shared? Do you feel comfortable talking about?
No, it was just his energy was down. He was sad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's so like, this is the hottest team in the game. He's playing arguably the best playoff basketball of his career. He's leading this young Phoenix Suns team, and just his voice and his energy was just very sad. So I just really felt for him this morning.
Well, we certainly feel for him, his family, everyone who's dealing with this. And by the way, you mentioned the New York Yankees situation.
Yeah.
We don't know if he's the only person on the Phoenix Suns
who's
going to end up with a positive test. This doesn't necessarily just mean him. Now, the fact that they have not all been together, I assume, since they ended game four, right?
Everyone Chris lives here in Los Angeles.
Chris lives here in Los Angeles. He does a pretty heroic job as a dad, commuting back and forth.
Well, they went back to practice yesterday, right?
Right. Well,
yeah.
And I don't, was he in that practice? I don't know if he was in
even
that
though
practice
it was light workout, Monty told me it was going to be a light workout. So.
Right.
Who knows if they all got together.
Yes, and Monty Williams has said that he doesn't even want to address game one status for Chris Paul until we get closer and get more clarity,
right.
Which makes sense because we don't know when Chris will be able to produce those two negative tests, which is what he needs for the first step. Again, there is then cardiac testing afterward. I was on the phone with the league office 3 minutes before this show and trying to get a timeline on how long that takes. It usually takes about 2 days because they have to have that observation in between. Now, does those 2 days mean that the second test happens on the morning of a game and he could play in the game? It depends on which day. It depends on when he clears that second negative test and when the first cardiac test can happen. There's just a lot we don't know yet. What we do know is what you just said, Matt, is that Chris Paul, who's had pretty bad injury luck at times when it comes to the playoffs, especially in the last 5 years, is having really bad luck again. And that stinks. It stinks for the game, and it stinks for Chris.
Praying for our brother, man.
Let's move on to another huge breaking news story. In fact, several, because there is personnel news around the league, and it is not stopping. We've got two coaching changes. Stan Van Gundy with the Pelicans, Scott Brooks with the Wizards. Neither one is with either of those teams anymore, friends, because they have all parted ways. We also learned that Donnie Nelson is out as the Mavericks GM. So let's start with Stan Van Gundy. The Pelicans announcing Stan out as after one season as head coach. Van Gundy was 31 and 41. Woj and Andrew Lopez reporting that potential candidates include assistants Jacques Vaughn, Ime Udoka, Charles Lee, and Jason Kidd. Mark, I'm putting Teresa Witherspoon's name in there.
Rich.
I don't care whether it's in the reporting or not. I think she should be considered. Tell me why you don't think it worked out between Stan and the Pelicans.
Stan was in a bad position from the beginning because there was no real training camp because of COVID. There was not much time with the players in the offseason like you would get time in Vegas. But everybody had that. But he has such a young team. Like, his top three scorers are 23 and younger. They didn't have any shooting. I did think he helped progress Zion by moving him to point guard, but they lost too many close games. They had too many turnovers, and ultimately I think there was a disconnect in a lot of ways with him and some of the young guys. And that's got to be tough for Griff because this was his first real big hire, right, to hire Stan and bring him in, the general manager of the Pelicans or the president of the Pelicans. So where do they go next? Yeah, I do agree with you. I mean, Zion's close with Witherspoon. Let her come in and show if she's worthy of the job. I think at minimum, she's got to be on that staff next year. I expect her to be on the front of the bench if she is. But I'm starting to get rumblings about Charles Lee. I think he really impressed them last year when he interviewed. And I think right now, if I had to put my money on it, it'd be the Bucks assistant.
I think Mark hit it on the head. I think it's the disconnect between Stan's old school principles and this young team. I got a chance to play for Stan in 2009 and 10, and he's just great X and O's, but an old school type of basketball coach. And that's not a knock on him. Just the game has progressed so much that I said from the very beginning, not that he's a bad coach, but he's a bad fit for this team for the reason that this team is too young for his coaching mentality and style. So unfortunate situation for him, for Griff, for this team. But you're thinking about it, Zion's going to be heading be on his third coach at the start of his third year. So that's never a good sign. You want consistency and stability for this young team, especially because, like Mark just said, their top three scorers are under 23 years old. So they need someone. This next hire needs to be a very important hire because hopefully it'll be there for, you know, a 5-7-8 year run.
So how many coaches Ingram had?
Right?
Right.
Right. That actually, I mean, that is a consideration here. And you have to think about the quick trigger of just one season. And look, the conversations have been going on between management and Stan Van Gundy for a while. This didn't just happen
and,
this morning.
And Rachel, I think you made a really good point about Witherspoon. This is the closest I have felt that there would be a female head coach in the NBA. This is the closest I think it's come. With Teresa Witherspoon here in New Orleans, and then Becky Hammond is going to be interviewing for several different jobs.
We should clarify, Teresa already has a position in the organization. She is close and well-liked by those players already.
And well-respected, too.
And she's Witherspoon.
Okay. I'm just encouraged, right? Because this is the closest it's come. Well, and I don't know if she's going to get this job, but I think, as you said, Mark, she should be on the staff. I think Becky's interviewing for a few jobs. She's in serious consideration for a couple of the jobs that are out there right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see her get either the job or be in the finalist rounds for several different openings right now.
I mean, we have seen so many coaches come through the NBA, either as head coaches yep. or interim head coaches. Some of the people who haven't gotten a shot before, yes. and we're talking about assistants who are on the bench, former players who have worked their way. You don't just get yep. a prize for being a former mm-hmm. player. These guys have worked their way up through other staffs, and I'd like to see them get a shot.
I think it's important to bring in new blood. I think we kind of keep recycling the older coaches, and this, again, not a knock on the older coaches. This game is just not where it was when they were in their prime coaching. You know, players get out of their prime, coaches get out of their prime sometimes. Yep. So this new fresh blood, player blood, whether it's male or female, I definitely think we're on the brink. Whether one of these two women get a job this year, mm-hmm. I'm saying within the next 2 years, one of them will definitely be a head coach, and we're going to set, you know, a new president in the NBA. But I think it's very important to stop recycling the same old guys. You know, yep. there's a reason why they keep getting moved on, just like there's a reason why older players keep having
can
to
they,
move on
can they
and
take
finally
a chance,
retire.
Though?
Who?
Can they try a new guy there?
In New Orleans?
Yeah.
It's tough. That's a tough situation because there hasn't been any consistency with someone there. So you're taking a chance, whether it be a yeah. first-time head coach or a female. It's going to be a big chance, but it's something they probably have to do.
And look, it's not just New Orleans. In just a couple right. minutes, just 2 minutes. So stick with us for a two-minute break. Right. But we're going to discuss Woo. The Wizards situation, why they couldn't come to a deal with Scott Brooks and who might replace him there. We'll get into it. All right, Woj reporting Scott Brooks will not return as Wizards head coach after the two sides failed to come to an agreement on a new contract. Brooks coached Washington for 5 years, making the playoffs as the 8th seed this season. So, look, after the strong finish to get to the postseason, Mark, you've done a lot of reporting on African-American coaching yeah. candidates and why this league needs to make much more progress in that area. Where do you see that fitting into this search, especially in my hometown of Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
There's a lot of argument that they should have a black head coach.
There's a lot of argument for all the positions.
Yep.
It's growing. Was it seven now?
Amen.
Could be. I'm not going to speculate on other jobs. And look, Nate, what's going to happen in Atlanta?
So yep. that is an excellent
Nate
point.
Nate should
Mark
be the subject
Pierce.
Of a bidding war. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's more to that Nate story than
okay,
what we
all right.
know right now.
But so what do you see?
In Washington, like, it has to be somebody that could fit in with Russ.
Okay.
Like, and Bill. Like, to me, I know people don't like to have players in part of the process. They should be.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them should be. They are the franchise, and you need somebody. I think it'd be unique to have players be in the room when you interview these guys, too. They don't want to give them too much power, but Tommy Shepp. you need them two guys happy, so I think they should be involved with this process. And look, I've written about these guys a lot of times. There's a long list of black assistants and current coaches that are worthy, for sure.
Look, I was a little surprised that this didn't get worked out because we all know that Scottie Brooks gets along really well with Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
But Scott needs some security if he's going to stay.
Yeah.
So if they weren't going to give him security, if it was just you could stay for another year, then I understand why he leaves.
That's just a tough seat to be in. There's been so many big pieces coming and going. How do you really have any stability again? Obviously, you want that as players, but you want it as a coach, too. So mm-hmm. you're losing someone like, you know, John Wall's hurt for 2 years.
Yep.
Brad's in and out. You get Russ. Tough situation for Scott Brooks, but I really like him.
I would keep Robert Pack for Russell Westbrook, though.
There you go.
At least keep him.
Ramona, thank you for joining
yeah.
us. Breaking news day. Ramona always Woo. Flies into the rescue. Thank you
I
very
live close.
Much.
Sort of.
You'll be back a little bit later. We will be back talking KD. Just a minute. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm still here with Matt Barnes, Mark Spears, and as you just saw in that recap, Kevin Durant played an absolute masterpiece last night. He went the full 48 minutes, scored 49 points to go along with 17 rebounds and 10 assists. Every bit of it was needed with Kyrie Irving out. James Harden hobbled the entire game. Matt, was this KD's best career performance in your eyes?
This is definitely one of them. I mean, he's had some pretty amazing performances in the finals. He's got mm-hmm. two finals MVPs under his belt. But considering all the outside noise, and normally we don't care, but the outside noise is so loud now with social mm-hmm. media and how much people talk and so much reporting that KD went and answered that bell. You know what
yep.
I mean? 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, willed his team to win. But also, hats off to James Harden. You know, we can tell early that he didn't attack the basket one time, so we knew he wasn't healthy. But I mm-hmm. think his presence is a calming presence out there. Got them into offense, made some key passes
yep.
down the stretch for an assist. But overall, man, KD has answered the bell. He is the best player in the world, and you just love to see it.
I think that finals game when they shut down to Cleveland and got
so it was game three, yeah, right, of the 2017 finals, and he hit the shot, yeah, over LeBron James.
Now,
here you
but
go.
But here's a game.
That's the other one in contender, right?
Yeah, but I called Mike Brown because I'm doing a story about him coaching the Nigerian national team. Mm-hmm. He mentioned the 2017 game when the Warriors went up 2-0, mm-hmm, I mean 3-0 against the Jazz. KD had 38-13. I think the difference is he also had Steph Curry next to him.
I was going
to
say, stakes are different there,
where
too.
You didn't have Kyrie and you, in his essence, didn't have James Harden.
You didn't. Mm-hmm.
So for KD to put the team on his back like that, special.
Absolutely.
Special performance, because that, like, he definitely, it was him in the miracles last night, and he made it happen.
Right.
Another team, I got a chance to talk to KD after they
you're talking game to everybody, yeah, I mean, dog.
This is, you know, you guys got your sources. I got
I
my old teammates.
Say,
you know,
come on,
I got
man.
We got sources. You got the people.
But he was just very confident and just like, you know, all we have to do is go out there and play basketball.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's what his mindset is. He's always someone who is so razor locked in that he just had to get the rest of his team to believe. You know what I mean? The some role guys haven't been as key as they normally are. Those guys stepped up last night. But just overall, just the belief that you can do it. Obviously, being at home helps. They're gonna have to go back on the road now. A lot of minutes for him. Played every single minute. Do you worry about that or not? Like Coach Nash said, this is the playoffs and we need it. So going to be interesting to watch the rest of this series, but it's been fun. It's been a beautiful thing to watch.
I did say on the show yesterday, if I had to bank on one player in the entire league and certainly in that game to have a huge game, I'm putting my money on Kevin Durant. The choice was Kevin Durant or Giannis. And right. I said, no disrespect to Giannis,
yeah,
who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But Kevin Durant, to yeah me, is the guy I would put all my chips on. And after this game,
well,
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I like when people go out and prove me right. Thank you, KD.
Yeah.
But Giannis Antetokounmpo said after this game, KD is the best player in the NBA now. And this is a conversation, Matt, you and I were having just a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
If you had to pick to save your house, if you had to draft NBA players, who would be your first all-around pick? Assume that everyone is healthy, everyone is the current age that they are now. Would you pick Kevin Durant
absolutely
first? It seems like that is more and more the answer.
And you also got to think, he heard a lot of chirping because P.J. Tucker had a good game. Physical,
sure,
and he had an off night. And it kind of reminded me when they said that Ruben Patterson was the Kobe stopper. And Kobe said, oh, really?
Oh, really?
You know, so this is KD didn't have to say nothing. He just came out and proved it. But to the Giannis point, it's great that you're giving someone props. You're in the second round of the playoffs. But to hear him say that I'm going to do whatever the coach wants me to do, you're a former defensive player of the year. You don't run from that matchup. I don't care mm-hmm who's guarding him. I'm telling my teammate, I'm taking KD.
This is the next question,
yes,
right?
Well, sorry
Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, no, to me, it's, you know, you should always want that challenge, especially for someone like Giannis. You know, he mm-hmm hid in the corner on the shooter, Joe Harris, you know, a majority of the night. But if I'm Giannis, you see someone like KD, knowing that's their main weapon, and if you're able to slow him down, you can possibly win. For Giannis not to say, hey, I don't care who's guarding him, coach, I'm guarding him right now, that kind of bothered me.
Well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to make KD mad at me. All right. Let's go back to March 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the house. And look, we're looking at it right now. KD
right?
had 10 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds, 4 turnovers, and was a negative 15, and was tossed after 17 minutes. Why? He was frustrated the way Giannis was guarding him. Giannis is the only player I've seen who matches his size, who matches his length. Maybe he is taller, maybe he is longer. It's like he's looking at his image, right?
Right, yeah.
So why hasn't Giannis been
right
on him?
With that said,
y'all was at this game.
Yeah,
y'all was at this game that I was talking about. Y'all studied.
Said, right.
Like you don't remember that game? Why hasn't he guarded him? Like, only God could stop KD. But if I'm going
to
put somebody out there, you know,
like
solid
Middleton,
bet
respect, P.J.
Right.
Tucker, amazing defender. But why don't you put somebody that is his spitting image against him?
Well, Giannis did say after the game that he wanted to do
it's
that.
Too late.
You think so?
Yeah, it's too late.
Really? You think the series is over now?
I just think that you got to have that competitive spirit from the beginning.
Jump.
He should have been guarding him since game one.
From the jump.
Not game six.
And even if he has good games, you're their best option. Although, you know, you're still their best option. I understand you want to save his legs and this and that, and you have guys you can rotate on him. But Giannis should be the main guy guarding KD from game one.
Well, I will say this. All of the sort of, well, if you're the defensive player of the year, not every defensive player of the year, especially big men, have gone out on the perimeter and guarded wings. No one was telling Hakeem to go out on the wing, right?
But this is different. You got to take
players.
That challenge because he's
well,
an in-between guy.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying that particular argument of if you're supposed to be the defensive player of the year, shouldn't you be, whatever. I think he should be doing it because he's Giannis Antetokounmpo, not because he has a defensive player
whatever
of the
accolade,
year tag,
right?
It's because he's Giannis and his game is flexible enough and we are in this era that we are in that he should be the one who is at least trying to check Kevin Durant.
Right.
That is why I think he should be trying.
That's what the great ones do.
We will see whether he is going to do it in this next game and if these gentlemen are right, if it's too late. You know who else whose opinion I would respect on pretty much anything he comes out of his mouth? Yeah. The NBA's all-time leading scorer, six-time MVP Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, joining The Jump next. We're going to discuss his social justice documentary, how the role of center has indeed changed since his playing days, the Bucks chase for the title. Anything that comes out of this man's mouth, you are going to want to listen to. The captain is joining us next. We now welcome in one of the greatest of all time in any sport, Hall of Famer, the NBA's all-time leading scorer, the GOAT of GOATs, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. I'm always so happy when you are on the show. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
You have a new documentary coming out on the History Channel. It comes out Saturday night. It's called Fight the Power, the Movements That Changed America. What motivated you to executive produce this project?
Well, I kind of felt that so many of our movements in America really are based on the same thing. People who feel that they are not treated very well and have no chance of being able to live their lives as they see fit for any number of reasons. You know, women were denied the vote and they were a majority. You've had riots, you have the Stonewall riots, you have the LA riots protesting the treatment of Rodney King. There's so many different elements. The shirtwaist factory that made it very obvious that we had to do a much better job for protecting people in the workplace. All of these things came from the same desire for equal and fair treatment. So that's that to me is what it's about. And it's amazing. They just announced that Juneteenth is now a federal holiday. That's when we'll be showing it for the first time on Saturday night.
Sir, first, thank you for everything you've done on and off the court, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. What did you think about in the bubble, what the players did, NBA players did from a social justice standpoint? And if one of them were to ask you what they should do going forward, what would you tell them?
Well, I thought the way that they were able to share their social consciousness without offending people, just to show them what their concerns were and why. And they did it in a way that people could listen to it. And it wasn't about anger. It was about getting people to understand what the issues are. It's very, very important that this is done. We all saw what happened with Colin Kaepernick. He had an issue about police violence against Black Americans, and the people who didn't want that subject discussed tried to change the subject and say that he was doing it against America or against our armed forces or against something. And all he was doing was using his platform to call attention to a very important issue. The NBA has a long history of not doing that. They have a long history of trying to figure out how to give the guys a chance to express themselves without making fools of themselves. And that's what they did. I was very happy to see how they handled it. People understood. In my neighborhood, which is not a Black and brown neighborhood, the Black Lives Matter protest last summer, it was shocking. You know, all the people that were not Black people out there that were appalled by what happened to Mr. Floyd. It's nice to see that the communication is starting to take place.
Kareem, how you doing? Matt Barnes again, and I want to echo what Mark said. Thank you for all your work on and off the court. This social fight isn't new to you. You've been in this for a very long time, so you don't always get the recognition you deserve when it comes to this or basketball, I feel, but we definitely wanted to tell you today that we definitely appreciate you. Transitioning from social justice to basketball, how has the center position changed from your time when they had to feed you the ball and you got to do what you wanted to now? There aren't very many centers, maybe two, that they can actually throw the ball down to and play through today.
Well, I think it has to do with the way that the three-point shot has stretched the court. But here in L.A., we have a center, Anthony Davis. He's really capable of doing it all. He can defend the hoop and rebound, block shots and rebound in the paint. Yet at the other end, he can go out there, set screens on the perimeter, and step back, hit the three-pointer, or play with his back to the basket in the paint when they have a height advantage. So I think the versatility of your team and the various players on your team really is what this is all about now. It's what the game is all about. Centers now can't just be limited to the paint. Well, that's a challenge. But there's some guys that have responded are doing an incredible job. Joel Embiid,
yep.
Awesome. He can go and play with his back to the basket, but he come out, play on a perimeter, and defend on the perimeter.
And, of course, we saw Nikola Jokic win the MVP this year, so it's certainly an evolution.
Jokic was the first center to win it since Shaq, I think.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Now, the first since, if we're going to get into that, you were part of the only Bucks team to ever win an NBA title, and that was 50 years ago this year, which underscores just how difficult it is to do in the NBA. What do you think of how the Bucks series against the Nets has progressed and what it would mean if they could get through here and even win a title, what it would mean to the city of Milwaukee?
I think the folks in Milwaukee will lose their minds, because it's just they've been snake bit a number of times by injuries and had great teams. I remember when Bob Lanier went there and played out his career and had a great run there, but they just couldn't make it into the finals. So they're going to have to get it done, one way or the other, and they have the horses, but there is a reason why we play the games.
Yes. I know during the break we were talking that, as you put it, Kevin Durant is not here to play. So that is something they will have to overcome. I do want to get into how you did leave Milwaukee, because it was actually on this date. We have the anniversary right now. 46 years ago on this date is when you were traded from Milwaukee to the Lakers. And we've talked about this before. You kept that trade request private. You played a full season without incident before the trade was actually made. You went and did your job. But looking back, why did you feel, since we are on the anniversary of it today, was the best move for your career? And really, you were at the birth of player empowerment, saying, I would like to be moved.
The reason that I tried to keep it on the down low as much as I could is because, I really appreciated the way the people in Milwaukee had treated me. They paid me well and they supported me. And, I wanted to give them an opportunity to get the best deal that they could get for me. And the more I kept my mouth shut, the easier that could have happened. Mm-hmm. So I decided I'd keep my mouth shut and let them try to make the best deal that they could, because I wasn't going to play another year there.
Right.
And, it all worked out for me,
Yes, clearly. We can see that right now with the footage. Absolutely. And I know that the city of Milwaukee has been looking for someone like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar since. They're very happy with their two-time MVP, but they would be even happier if they could get a Kareem-like title there back in Milwaukee. So we will follow that as well.
Giannis and those guys are, I've been there to see them play. Mm-hmm. They're an incredible team, but I don't know what it is. Sometimes it's just you can't get the right team to go as far as you want it to go. But it's still a great team, and it wins the support of all the fans.
You're
just going to have to figure out a better approach.
Do you think that this Bucks team, the way it is now, do you think that this team is capable of winning a title?
No, I don't. I, you know, KD would kill those guys, man. No, I'm serious. Because he, you know, he'd score,
we know you and are.
He finds the open guy. He could do that by himself. They got to do a better job. You know, the whole team has to play differently so that KD, one guy, can't just dominate like that.
Well, they'll have one more shot at it, and we'll see what they can do in Game 6. Kareem, it is just such a privilege to get to be able to talk to you. I always say I have the most fun job, but it's getting to actually meet and talk to over the years you, frankly, that has made me feel like I have just the honor is out of control. So,
and let you guys know, we've the Social Justice Award, had a meeting on that, and we've got it all figured out. And I'm looking forward to, you know, making the announcement. I'm very honored that they would, choose me to represent that. You know, I grew up watching Jackie Robinson and Bill Russell as my heroes. And, you know, Muhammad Ali, I stand on their shoulders. So to be singled out like this is really special for me. I'm very thankful.
Well, I know that the NBA is better for this award existing, and frankly, there is no one else who I think it could have been named after. We had Harrison Barnes on the show earlier this week talking about his project. We've talked about some of the other projects that were finalists as well, and we will look forward to your announcement. It is so, so important. Thank you, Kareem.
Harrison has been doing an awesome job.
He really has, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just so, so fascinating to see. Kareem, thank you so much. I really cannot tell you how much I appreciate your time, and how tongue-tied I always get around you is a pretty good indication of how I feel.
Let me turn my phone off, because we can't be interrupted like that.
Well, we'll let you take your call. We appreciate it, and we will look forward to you joining us again soon. Thank you so much, Kareem.
You're welcome. Continued success, guys.
All right. Thank you. Everyone else, stick with us. We're going to talk about the Mavericks moves next. Woj reporting LaMelo Ball will win Rookie of the Year. LaMelo averaging 16-6-6 for the Hornets helped make them the East play-in tournament contenders that they were. Matt, agree with LaMelo over Anthony Edwards, which was the call.
Very close run. You know, I think before LaMelo got hurt, he was the clear-cut favorite. He got hurt. Anthony Edwards went on a run. Two very talented young players, but happy for LaMelo.
I thought that Edwards might have a shot, but Melo's momentum was so high, it's hard for him.
Especially once LaMelo came back, right? Then it was sort of like, okay.
Yeah, he is who we thought.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still joined by Matt Barnes, Mark Spears. Gentlemen, more breaking news. It never stops. The Mavericks announcing they and longtime GM Donnie Nelson have parted ways. Nelson spent 24 years with the franchise. Here's a portion of the statement from Mark Cuban today. Quote, I just want to thank Donnie for his 24 years of service. Donnie has been instrumental to our success, helped bring a championship to Dallas. Donnie will always be part of the Mavs family, and I wish him all the best. Now, I would have put an extra sentence in that release saying, and is the guy who made sure we drafted Luka Doncic when three other franchises ahead of us decided that they did not want to make that choice? I would have put that in the statement, but that's just me. Mark, what do you know about this situation? What more can you tell us?
Donnie was fired.
Okay.
Let's just be real. Donnie was fired. He's been there since 1988, and I've heard that one guy that's really upset about it is the guy you don't want upset about it.
The one guy.
Luka Doncic. They were really, really close. And actually, Doncic's in Slovenia. He's working out with the Slovenian national team, getting prepared for the Olympics. And he will have a statement tomorrow.
Really?
At a press conference. I'm not sure what he's going to say, but apparently he's going to make a statement about Donnie's firing tomorrow. Mm. Also being told, in terms of the $200 million extension, how are talks going? People close to him are saying that. What talks? There's no talks right now.
By the way, Matt, his relationship, Luka's relationship with Donnie Nelson goes back. That Donnie was over scouting him when Luka was 14.
I heard that. Yeah.
So that's how far this goes back.
I mean, and there's also rumblings about Luka not really being happy with other people who have a lot of power in the organization. But you have a franchise and a generational talent right here. Whoever he doesn't like needs to go.
Well, yeah. My prediction is that extension gets signed, but there might be some more changes before
it
happens. We will be right back recapping all of the day's news. There is still a lot more to talk about. Stick with us. Welcome back. Let's recap what has happened thus far. The Pelicans parting ways with Stan Van Gundy after one season as head coach. Zion will now have his third coach in 3 years. Meanwhile, Scott Brooks parting way with the Wizards after the parties could not agree to a new contract. Meanwhile, here in L.A., Kawhi Leonard out indefinitely after suffering a sprained right knee. A pivotal Game 5 awaits tonight between the Clippers and Utah. And Chris Paul has entered the league's health and safety protocols. The length of his absence still to be determined, but according to Matt Barnes, who spoke to him this morning, CP3 is vaccinated, so hopefully he can move through. The protocols stay the same, but hopefully he can move through them more quickly. To add to all of this, LeBron James took to Twitter this hour to voice his displeasure, saying in part, quote, "They didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players. This is the best time of the year for our league and fans, but we are missing a ton of our favorite players due to injury. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your favorite guys right now." Matt, what do you think of these words from LeBron?
They're right. You know, you want to wonder, is money ever going to outweigh, or importance of players' health ever going to outweigh the money? I mean, these guys have been burning it on both ends. The bubble situation, short off season, change of schedule, all-star, Olympics coming up this summer. I mean, these guys need a break. It's unfortunate we're seeing everybody break down, but it's small stuff. You know, Kawhi gets bumped off, and that's probably just because of fatigue. So
right.
Tough situation to handle. Hopefully the NBA can figure something out.
Let's pray.
Right. I need a break.
We do wish the best to everyone out there, and we will be back tomorrow.